time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio all by myself today because Don Wyatt, my co-host, is away on assignment, and sitting in for him, although she's in a faraway place, is Kay Beach of Axiom for Liberty. Kay, are you there?
I am. Thank you very much for having me.
I'm just delighted that you are available, and you normally you have your own radio show. I think you're on hiatus right now, aren't you?
I am on extended hiatus for the moment. That's right.
All right. Give our listeners the name of your blog. You have a blog, Axiom for Liberty.
I do. It's Axiom for Liberty. That's AXXIOM, axiomforliberty.com. And you can find any items that I've been blogging about, which hasn't been a whole lot recently, but I'm starting to pick it back up.
And your radio shows are archived, aren't they? So even though you're on hiatus, they can go back and listen to past interviews?
Yes, they're right up there at the top of the website.
So there's a link on the website. So you really do need to go to axiomforliberty.com, and you'll find it there. Well, I'm with OK Safe. That's Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And our website is ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. Our second website is exposinghealthcarereform.com, exposinghealthcarereform.com, which was created while we were in the midst of the battle against the implementation of Obamacare, what we around here call the Unaffordable Care Act. Our position was strongly opposed to the establishment of a state-based insurance exchange, and we're happy to report that in this state, at least, broadcasting from Oklahoma, there is no state-based exchange. I'm unhappy to report, though, there is the federally facilitated marketplace, which is the federal exchange. So an exchange still exists, but at least it was not created by the state, although it would have been just as compliant as the federal exchange. You know, we're in the midst of enrollment, the adoption of health care insurance, the purchase of health care insurance by every single person in the United States, whether you want it or not. And Kay, do you partake of that, or do you have other coverage? Not to get too personal here, but
no, my husband has coverage through the corporation that he works for, and we haven't had to get involved in any of that so far. Of course, there's been changes to coverage and different things that I think have come about in response to the Obamacare law. But I'm okay for the moment.
It's just a nightmare. If you go to healthcare.gov, you can't access the exchange. And who needs to be looking at that if you're so inclined with people if you don't currently have insurance or you're about to lose your employer's insurance? If you already have insurance and you're on Medicare or you have small group insurance, you don't need to go anywhere. That's not for you. It's for those who are uninsured, who are looking for insurance and maybe qualify for a tax subsidy.
Have you been watching the numbers as far as how many people are enrolling? How is that going?
I think 10 have made it so far. I'm kidding. There were a lot of problems with the website. It was overloaded, and apparently somebody had said there was some bad code in there. But open enrollment started October 1st. And we're about a week or two weeks into October, and I think they've worked out some of the glitches. But keep in mind, it is a government program, and it's a massive, intertwined, complex system. And my hope is that it will crash. But
I understand it, for the people who go there, they have to, and I've had people tell me this personally, they have to enter in quite a lot of personal information before they even can see anything.
Yes, you do. And that is to, like a pre-sorting of sorts. You have to create an identification on there. So you log in and you create an identity, and that's your login address. So now consider it another website that you have to have a username and a login address, a password. So you get in there, so that's your ID. So if you come back later, you got to use that same ID if you're looking for your quote. And you can tool around. But in order for them to come up with the answer of where to put you or what plans that you might work for you, they have to know some demographics, not only your name, and your date of birth, your family composition, but also your residency, so that they can find out which insurance products are available in your area, because not every insurance company is in every single state. So there are a lot of things that you have to put in there. And but no worry, it's a computer program, so it's safe. Anyway, we're getting a little off subject here, but today our guest, we're going to be talking with Jenny White, who is the president and co-founder of ROPE, Restore Oklahoma Public Education. And today we're going to be talking about public education just in general, but specifically about the Common Core State Standards, which is a highly controversial set of standards, which we'll get into what a standard is, that the states, many of whom are adopting, or the education systems for Common Ed are adopting against the wishes, just like Obamacare, against the wishes of most of the people in the state, including the teachers. And there's a lot of pushback against the Common Core State Standards. Education always hits a nerve with people because we're talking about our children. There's a whole lot of data collection that goes on with this. It's a dumbing down, a continued dumbing down of it. And what we believe is probably just a rehashing of outcomes-based education is school to work, which if you've been around long, you remember that from the early 90s. In fact, healthcare reform was been around since the early 90s. So we're actually reliving Clinton administration here. Welcome, Jenny. Are you there?
I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here today. Tell our listeners about yourself and briefly describe what ROPE does in Oklahoma.
Well, I have a master's degree in biology and taught in public schools for about 10 years, taught science on different levels, and came home to start a family, second family, I guess you could say. And after I had been home for some time with my children, realized that their education system was just not good at all. And what I found out that they really weren't teaching U.S. history anymore. This social studies thing is not history. It's something totally different. And I got involved with education just simply trying to make sure that our kids were learning American history. And that has been, I guess, in 2008 now. And then in 2010, we started paying attention to the race to the top, because after we worked with this history, trying to increase the history standards, we took part in pushing back against State Question 744, which was to bring a lot of influx of taxpayer dollars into, just unaccounted for taxpayer dollars into public schools, and we helped defeat that. And then after that, we started looking into Race to the Top, because that was just on the heels of 744. And once we started looking into Race to the Top, we really got concerned about Common Core and then the data collection that went along with it, and really what I call kind of the four pillars of education reform, which, like you said, take us back to the Clinton era.
Yeah, we're back to the Clinton era. Before we get on to the next set of questions, give our listeners the ROPE website. And do you have a blog in addition to the website? If so, give that information.
I do. And we have a Twitter account, and we even have a Pinterest account now. So we have quite the web footprint. But if you can find everything if you just go to our webpage, which is www.restoreokpublicEducation.com.
If you put in ROPE, all caps, with a period after each letter, and then Oklahoma, you'd come up with that too, right?
Really? Well, I don't know. I haven't tried that one.
Yeah. If you can't remember the whole name, just put in ROPE, Oklahoma, anyway, and you'll get it. Well,
Jenny, you were mentioning Race to the Top, and I wanted to see if I could get you to give us an encapsulation real quick of what are the Common Core State Standards, and you might want to mention what that Race to the Top thing, how that introed into that. But tell us a little bit about what is Common Core.
Well, Common Core is a set of standards that were to be adopted by a majority of the states. And obviously, you have to believe that it was a national effort to nationalize standards. You have to believe that it's a nationalized effort because of the fact that Race to the Top was a billions of dollars of federal grant money that went to states that adopted the Common Core State Standards, these four pillars of education reform, which were the Common Core State Standards, turning around underperforming schools, a state longitudinal database, and teacher accountability measures. So the standards themselves just were standards. Just by this grade, the child will know this. By the next grade, the child will know that. But the only problem was states had to adopt them sight unseen in order to get the race to the top funds. So every legislature in the country, in order to get race to the top funds, agreed to this set of standards prior to even being able to read them. And now we're going back to the healthcare law. So we keep going backwards. We don't seem to go forwards.
Okay, so this is something that I think is real interesting about Common Core. And, you know, it was last year that we went to the EGON Forum convocation or whatever you want to call it. And what was interesting, Jenny, is that there were so many moms, of course, there, and so many women that obviously were not real tech savvy, okay? But these women had, and men, had invested so deeply in understanding Common Core because their children are involved. And they had learned a lot about technology and about how the federal government operates. And I couldn't have been happier because so many things that I've been studying, and Amanda too, over the years, it follows this same model, and you use that word standards, and it sounds so innocuous. But the federal government setting these standards, and you know, you make the point that the curriculum has to follow the standards. They're not supposed to be setting curriculum. But the thing that's really cool about this is that I just want the moms out there to know, if they've got their head around Common Core, they've got their head around everything. Because this is a model where you see the federal government using grants and incentives, setting standards. This is happening in all sectors of society. Okay, so you're looking at healthcare, you're looking at policing and the state fusion centers. So the federal government's setting the standards, and in the instances that they're prohibited from collecting the data or being involved in that part of society, they do a workaround, and they commonly do it through like a public-private partnership or working with private entities. And this is what we have seen with fusion centers, for example. There is a prohibition the federal government from collecting certain kinds of information or what have you, and so they will commonly use private entities to do some of their dirty work. And I say all that to bring you to this question about, I wanted you to tell us a little bit about, what is Achieve Inc.?
Well, I love the way you put all that together, because yes, what you're explaining is actually happening everywhere, and it's definitely happening in education. As the standards were rolled out and states were basically given a carrot to adopt them, given this money to adopt them, it became the talking point that these were state-led. And that was a word or a phrase meant to message they were done in your home state. So they weren't done out of your home state. These were all standards that were done inside your home state. They just happened to be all similar all over the country. And once you finally start studying the Common Core state standards, you find out that, no, they were not done on a state level at all. And what happened was that several business leaders, the president of IBM and the governor, the past governor of Wisconsin, Tommy Thompson, got together in 1996. So this goes all the way back to 1996. And these business leaders were saying, you know, we don't have enough good workers. How can we do that? We need to create better education standards. So that's precisely where all of this in a nutshell came from. And they knew, because there is a federal law against not only nationalizing standards, but a federalized database or a state national database of information. And it's very important to point out that these people did realize that. And what they did was they put together a public-private partnership in order to circumvent that pesky little law or those pesky little laws. The president of IBM and Governor Thompson put together an organization called Achieve. And Achieve Inc. is a private organization that is housed in Washington, D.C. And basically that became the clearinghouse for all of this information that they were putting together for standards. once the standards had some kind of format to them, they decided that they were going to shop them out through the CCSO, which is the Council of Chief State School Officers, and the National Governors Association. Also, both of these are private organizations. They're dues-paying organizations. There is no representation by taxpayers at all on these, but that was the way these standards were put together. And why? Because they knew they had to circumvent the federal laws that prohibited all nonsense.
You know, when you were listening, you were talking about your timeline and you were talking about Race to the Top in the year. That the year for the funding, Race to the Top, was grant money that was funded through, drum roll please, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, which was the stimulus bill. And the stimulus bill provided $100 billion worth of funding for education. And as a quote from the stimulus website is here, creating a historic opportunity to save hundreds of thousands of jobs, support states and school districts, and advance reforms and improvements that will create long-lasting results for our students and our nation, including early learning, et cetera, et cetera. So it's funny because you and I have been on parallel tracks. We've been fighting Obamacare and you've been fighting Race to the Top and Common Core. The funding for both of those entities came out of the stimulus bill because for us, the stimulus bill was the real health care reform law because that funded the High Tech Act, which was the money that the states took to adopt electronic health records. So Race to the Top is like a High Tech Act for education, giving the money so that they would adopt the electronic records or the technological infrastructure necessary to make all of this work. And in the stimulus bill, because you have to have technology delivery of education and healthcare, was the funding for the fiber optic cables all over the states, saying that we can connect the rural communities. So the stimulus bill was a humdinger of a bill funding what you found and what we've been fighting with Obamacare.
They're revamping society through, I mean, it sounds a little simplistic, and probably this is a little oversimplified, but they are revamping society through these data systems and federalizing every sector of society. And the thing that's really disturbing about this, Jenny, and I bet you've banged your head against the wall too over this, is how to explain to people. We understand about money and strings attached and grants and incentives and all this. Everybody understands that. But then to explain to them how their ability to self-govern, how their autonomy, how their sovereignty is leaking out through these data systems and the role that data or information itself plays in what amounts to a federalization on one level. And then, of course, as you know, a lot of these standards that are being implemented by coercion or by, you know, using the carrot, a lot of those standards will be international standards. So, the simplest thing to say is that globalization is the standardization of systems. Okay, so we're seeing this all the way down. And then I'm curious to know, how do you go about explaining to people what we are losing through these hidden and complex systems that are so hard to understand? How do you get that across to people?
Well, that's honestly a good question, because I think, and it's a sad state of affairs, but I think all three of us would have to agree that society is now to the point where we either won't believe that our government is doing things they shouldn't be doing, or we don't care that our government is doing things that they shouldn't be doing, because, you know, what the heck, we can gas up our boat on the weekends and watch American Idol, or we're not smart enough to really wrap our brain around that because we don't have the basic U.S. history knowledge of the Constitution that we all should as American citizens in order to protect our First Amendment rights. And I believe that that's kind of where we are right now, and it is almost an impossible task, and you just have to hope that, you know, God's just waking people up, because this is way over many people's heads, and it's very frustrating. So you just simply have to tear it down to the very basic structure, which is I do a lot of flow charts, you know, because you have to show that this comes from this, that comes from this, that comes from that. And it's just a very time-intensive, you know, blow-by-blow,
The hidden aspect of this is because all of those things you said are true. And there are people that just don't care. That's always been true. And you know what? We actually have enough people, I think, to make a difference that do care. But then,
You know, I, Jenny, I can really appreciate the difficulty in explaining this complex system to people because they don't understand it. You can't see it. You can't touch it. Now, they're interacting with it without knowing it. The data collection is happening through your everyday activities, and government, the delivery of government services, whether it's education, getting your driver's license, legislation, interacting with your state, municipal agencies, entities. They say go online or file your taxes online, file, submit your requests online. Everything is going to online. Now, education is moving to online delivery, right? Everything will be through a computer. Kids are given computers or laptops through the schools. There's a software program, right?
Absolutely.
All of that. So, what we're seeing is the shift away from tangible delivery of education. You know, here's a book, and here's your assignment, and read it, and write your paper with a pen and paper, a pencil or a pen, to electronic typing and clicking. And the teacher basically is a guide at the front, and the computer, the teacher is now the computer, because education is being delivered through the computer system. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's an absolutely straight on, complete accurate. I never even actually thought about putting it together the way you did. We are moving from a tangible to an intangible. And I think the further you get away from tangible, the further you get away from a normal mindset of understanding how things work, because humans just are built to understand the tangible. So it's very hard for people to wrap their brains around things that they can't see. And I do want to point out, so I think that's, I'm going to actually use that, because I think that's an excellent explanation. I think that's one of the reasons why people are having such a hard time explaining this. They think to themselves, oh, whoopee, my kid just brought home an iPad. How exciting is that? They never stop to realize that, no, that's actually not exciting at all, because you cannot intangibly produce an education. It's simply not going to happen. But I wanted to kind of back up for a second, because we were talking just a minute ago about federal intervention and intervention in healthcare and intervention in education. I wanted to bring up a point about that that I think is really important, and one that gets overlooked. The reason why we're having such trouble fighting some of these things, and we're having trouble funneling people into the point where they understand them well enough to fight them, I think the reason we're having this problem is it's not a federalization. It's exactly what you guys pointed out at the beginning of our conversation about the fact that in order to circumvent the federal laws that we have had in place for hundreds of years, certainly 50 in many of the education laws, if we have to circumvent those, we have to go around using this endless bureaucratic loop, which is a way of cutting out the taxpayer and cutting out representation so that the taxpayer has no representation, by creating these nameless, faceless bureaucracies that instead of a legislature or a governing body where a taxpayer has a voice, we don't do that anymore. We just have these nameless, faceless bureaucrats that are assigned these various tasks, which makes it almost impossible for the taxpayer to actually get a foothold in the door in order to be able to slam that door shut or open it up and run through it. Whatever your motive is going to be, it's almost impossible, because we have allowed our government to stop governing and instead become a bureaucracy in which taxpayers really have little to no say. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that people don't understand. They think, oh, I vote. Oh, I have a representative. Oh, I have a senator. But they don't stop to think about the numbers, the horrifying numbers of things anymore that simply aren't taken care of at the governance level, at a level in which the taxpayer can participate, which was the way that our founders created this country. So it's just extraordinarily frustrating.
It is. I think it's a disconnect also because people don't stop to think, like you said, like I'm voting. Well, if you're going to electronic delivery of voting, pretty soon you're going to have a voting app on your phone and you can just put in your user ID or a name or whatever, and you can register to vote while you're having a cup of coffee someplace or on the run, and there's your vote. Well, it's the same thing with education, is that it's through electronic means. What people aren't asking is, where does this information go? Who gets it?
Right.
Who's on the other end? How many ends are there? I mean, there's no boundaries to information or data or software programs. Who's to say that the voting apparatus, who's recording your votes, isn't some company in Spain, which it is, or that your teacher, whoever is grading this whatever, is a software program that originated in Hyderabad, India. They're not asking who's on the other end. Where's it going? And we're going to, why do we need people anymore?
Need people? Well, somebody's got to pay taxes to support all of this nonsense. That's why we need people, I guess.
Just to pay taxes. All right. Well, that's the music indicating it's the bottom of the hour and first half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden, and my special co-host today is Kay Beach with Axiom for Liberty, and our extra special guest today is Jenny White of Rope. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden with my special co-host this week, Kay Beach of Axiom for Liberty, and our guest today is Jenny White. We're discussing, amongst other things, Common Core State Standards and what's the problem with that. And before we left, when we left at the bottom of the hour, we were discussing just about technology and the changes in moving from government to governance and administrative mumbo-jumbo kind of stuff that's happening, and the disconnect as we move from tangible to intangible. And Kay, you found a great article. I want you to tell our listeners about this.
Yeah, actually, I looked up. This is something I've been reading about a lot lately, and that is the tyranny of bureaucracy and the tyranny of data and all this. But anyways, I looked up the term a state bureaucracy, I think. And I came up with an article by Jonathan Turley, and it's called The Fourth Branch of Government, where he's talking about the regulatory state, the bureaucratic state. And Jonathan Turley is, I believe he's a constitutional lawyer. He leans a little to the left. And so, you know, when you see the right and the left both noticing these same things, that there's something wrong. But he talks about the growing dominance of the federal government over the states, and how it's obscured more fundamental changes within the federal government itself. And you know, this kind of goes back to what we're talking about with complexity and everything. But a lot of most of our laws and most of the regulations are coming strictly through administrative processes and regulatory processes, which we don't even have a chance to debate or see. It looks like a really good article. It's called, I'll give you the title again, The Rise of the Fourth Branch of Government by Jonathan Turley. Good read.
All right. I like his quote there. It says, our carefully constructed system of checks and balances is being negated by the rise of a fourth branch, an administrative state of sprawling departments and agencies that govern with increasing autonomy and decreasing transparency. And pretty soon it can all be outsourced because it's just delivered via the internet anyway. All right. Kay, I think you were going to ask Jenny about John Craman.
Yeah, she told us about Achieve, which is one of those little workaround things again that we see so commonly. And there's a gentleman by the name of John Craman, I believe is with Achieve. And what is the significance of John Craman's role in all of this, Jenny?
Well, John Craman is our student, I believe they call him student data. I've forgotten his title, isn't that crazy? I don't know. He is the person who is in charge of administering and creating the state longitudinal database system for the Department of Education in Oklahoma. And we were very interested in his hiring because of the fact that we had seen his CV, which was put online, and his past includes not only a significant number of years of employment with Achieve, during which he was supposed to be helping to create Common Core state standards that were being created in the states, but he also came from the American Diploma Project. And both of these places, the American Diploma Project and Achieve, have several members in common, but one of them is a man named Mark Tucker, who has been... And I want to point out, too, it's so interesting when you go back and look at all of these bureaucrats who are making and creating and implementing education policy, very few of them actually have any kind of background in education. Mark Tucker, for example, was a drama major and then did some administrative work. And David Coleman, who's the man who's basically the architect of the Common Core State Standards, did something that wasn't really educational either. And then you have John Craman, who basically has spent a lot of his time working on educational issues, but has been more in the realm of data collection and creating information systems and that kind of thing. So he comes to Oklahoma and is employed as the highest paid employee now at the State Department of Ed in Oklahoma. And he basically just brought in every single thing that was being put together at the national level at, and you can't say it's federalized. I mean, you just, that's what I said. They worked to get around that, so you can't even say that. That all of this stuff at the nationalized level that was happening in Washington, D.C., Mark Crayman was just right in the middle of it all.
Amanda, that's sort of reminiscent of, like, our chief information officers, for instance, where they started with federal chief information officers, and then we got chief information officers in every state, and they are all sort of working off the same game plan.
Sure,
and
we got the state chief information officers the same time we got the stimulus money, and we got Race to the Top.
Right.
And we had the High Tech Act and moving. Everything happened at roughly the same time because they're all related. And the state chief information officer, you can tell people what they do.
Well, they basically manage the data systems. For instance, and you have actually interviewed Alex Pettit. He's the Oklahoma chief information officer. And the thing that I watch real closely is they are, of course, a member of an association called the National Association of Chief Information Officers. And if you want to know what the game plan is going to be, it's a very coordinated from federal to state level, certainly, probably on the international level as well, because we're standardizing all our systems because we're a global information society now. So they're coordinating all of the data consolidation and data systems and how all of that will be done.
Right. And basically what he's in charge is all purchases for state agencies, whether for information and communication technology, have to be routed through his office. Standardized. They awarded Capgemini. One of the first things he did when he was the position was created and he was hired was to award a $1 million contract to Capgemini, which is a global outsourcing technology and consulting firm, to do a statewide assessment of all the IT systems of all the state agencies. That was quite time consuming. There are a diversity of agencies in any state. And they each had their own purchasing protocols and would have their own particular computers or laptops that they would use, the software programs, etc. There was some level of autonomy, which is the better way to run a government. Not everybody is walking in lockstep, and you have one guy making all the purchasing decisions for the information for your computers and the software. Well, that went away, and they did the assessment, and they slowly have done away with the IT departments, the various IT departments, consolidated IT, consolidated the central processing units, and purchasing goes through him so that things become standardized. So when you're thinking of standardized computer systems, think of khaki pants and khaki shirts for everybody. That's the best way to think of it if you're not technologically minded, and that everybody gets the same kind of thing. Now, your computer could be red or pink or black, but what's on the inside is going to be the same as to certain requirements. And a long time ago, I worked in a retail establishment that was part of a large chain, corporate headquarters. The computers that you had in your offices were what were called dumb terminals. You could use the computer, but everything it was a store-owned software program. You could only enter into the fields that were allowed. There was no outside access. I think we're moving back toward dumb terminals and for state agencies. But anyway, he standardized and they produced a report and said, here's where you are, here's where you need to be, and here's the roadmap to get there. And that's what we're doing.
These guys are, I looked up his name, Jenny, and I found he spoke apparently at a recent interim study. He is the Executive Director of Student Data and Information Systems for the State Department of Education. And there's some bullet points here. And Mr. Crayman says the State Department of Education collects data because of federal requirements. And he goes on to sketch out some of the activities and things that they need to do. And, of course, the last bullet point says that the department's working on a privacy policy, which you always see this. They know where they're going. They are working on implementing these data systems and collecting all these data and circumventing and weakening laws in order to do so. And then the very last item on the agenda will always be an afterthought of working on the privacy policy, because the privacy policy is that there isn't any.
Well, they give a lot of lip service to it and yet continue to collect the data and expand the amount of data that's collected from a student, right? Isn't that what they're doing,
Jenny? I think that's what frustrates me so badly. I mean, this man literally sees it as his job to collect as much information on students as he possibly can. And at one point in time, I was not in this particular conversation, but this gives you kind of an idea about what these people think about their job, and particularly John Crayman. But several other of the board members of ROPE were sitting around in a group and were talking with him, and they were talking about how all of this information on students getting out was really going to harm the students. And basically he says, I don't care about the student. I'm not worried about the student. I could care less about them. I'm just worried about the data. All I care about is the data. And you think, how do you get to the position in your life? It's kind of like, I don't know how my car drives, but I just sit in the seat and somehow it goes places. I mean, how in the world does this man in this position really honestly have such a cognitive dissonance that he feels like, I'm just worried about the data, heck with the kids, whatever happens to them, who cares? I have been absolutely mortified about that since they recounted that to me. But knowing how this person works, I mean, because I won't get into personal issues, but knowing the way that Mr. Crayman does his job, you know, he considers us to be, you know, the fly in his soup, and is very frustrated that we keep coming up with the fact that, yes, he wants to be open and honest about all this data sharing, and then yet never really wants to reveal what that data sharing is, or wants to give part of the truth. And here's the worst part, because when you're dealing with a bureaucracy like this P20, which is the bureaucratic council, that runs the establishment of the state longitudinal database, they have gotten into a position where all of the work that they're doing is supposed to be part of open records. It's supposed to be open records. But they figured out a way to form subgroups to have other meetings so that they don't have to actually go to the one meeting that is open records, and then they deal with all of this other stuff on the side where nobody can see it. So, gosh, isn't that forthcoming? Aren't you glad that they're so excited about this transparency and data?
Well, I'm sure they have a website that you could go to and read all about them, though, right? Isn't that part of their transparency?
No, and that's the another beauty of the thing. They did originally produce, I guess, one major kind of a paper that told what they were going to do. And then the next year it was smaller, and then the next year it was smaller, and then, of course, we're not doing that anymore at all. So it's just the way these bureaucracies just completely usurp any kind of boundary at all. They become their own world, their own planet. They just simply get out of the orbit of regular government. It's honestly, it's crazy. It's crazy.
When you, Jenny, were talking about that they keep expanding the amount of data that they're collecting about it from each of the students, can you give our listeners an example of the breadth and scope of information that's being extracted from
the kids? I can't do that, because every time I study, and the more I study, the more I find. And so I can't even give you a scope on it. It's almost scopeless. And that is what everybody should be concerned about, because the whole thing is what Kay's been talking about for 100 years, which we all should have just been listening with bated breath, because we would have gotten this a long time ago. The importance of all of this is the fact that you could collect anything, and it just flat doesn't matter, because the main and the important issue is all the computers are talking on the same language, going back and forth on the same highway, using all the same terminology, and they could collect and share anything that they want. It's just almost to the point where it's limitless. Now, there are a whole bunch, and this is where when you have a legislator who says, well, you know, we have to have that federal money, or this is the one that I love the most, well, somebody's going to get that money. Why can't it be us? That's my favorite. Every time you get in bed with the federal government, and this data garbage for the education reform pillars is the biggest, I think, example of that. When you get in bed with the federal government, it's kind of like when you go to your parents and you say, Mom, Dad, I really could use a loan. They could give you the money, but you have to know that they're going to say, now, what are you going to use it for? Now, what are you getting? Well, I don't know that I really like that. There's always strings attached to that kind of thing. That's why autonomy is always best, but that's an aside. At any rate, when you start getting into a position where there are, like the No Child Left Behind waiver that Oklahoma took, because we never did get a Race to the Top grant, so any data that was to be collected on that is kind of superfluous. We probably do it just because we can, but it's not a necessity. But the No Child Left Behind waiver had reams of information that they were supposed to be, that the states are supposed to be collecting from students and reporting back at the federal level. And the most concerning of all of the data is behavioral data. And they use the behavioral data because they want to make sure that kids are safe in school. So they tie this all back to school safety and bullying. So they have in these reams of information that they're supposed to collect stuff like, What was the student suspended for? Was there a knife? How long was the knife? Was there a gun? Was the gun loaded? Who was the victim? Give the name of the victim and the age of the victim and the place where the victim was attacked. It just endless stuff that you just think, okay, I can't imagine all of us were perfect when we were growing up, and I had some problems in school. Well, you know what? Kids can't have problems in school now, because anything that's stuck in your record is going to be stuck with you like radiation. I mean, it's going to have a half-life like uranium. You can't get rid of it. Once it's got a digital footprint, you don't just go with some, you know, Mr. Clean and wipe that off. It doesn't happen. It ends up becoming enmeshed in an overall web of zeros and ones that are things that follow you for forever. And it's just,
this is what Mr. Emmett McGroarty, if I'm saying his right, McGroarty,
yes,
from the American Principles Project. I can't tell you. He spoke at the recent interim study on school data collecting and sharing at the Oklahoma State Capitol, and he went through how we got there, but then he really got down to the heart of the matter and to the underlying principles that we miss so often. And he was trying to make the attendees there understand, why is all this data collection a problem? And I don't have time to cover everything that he said, but I just want to make this point. Everyone understands that information is power. Understand this, that access to large data sets are prerequisite to social control. That's what you have to understand, and that's what we're talking about here. It's intimidating. I would hate to think that my records were permanent because I was an idiot in school, okay? I was a behavior problem. I know you guys are going to find this hard to believe. I was, you know, real capricious and stuff, you know, not like dangerous or anything. But I would hate for, my gosh, it was bad enough for my grades to follow me in college. They almost didn't let me in, which I went on to make a 4 point in everything in college. But he was trying to make the point, do you think this would be intimidating to know that everything about you is recorded in the hands of these government agencies and private businesses, and this is following you all the way to the workforce? Do you think that might be a little intimidating for a person? And the answer is, of course it would be. And on some level, that is driving all of these data systems. When we're talking about policing and intelligence and all that, that's the biggest driver right there. But the schools, this is true too. And the schools are just seen as another data point to manage the population.
When we're talking about this data, when you're talking, Kay, I was listening to that, and it's like, what's the point? Yeah, surveillance, but also a boatload of money in the selling of the data. They're not doing it just for fun. There's money in these software programs that collect the data. There's money in reconfiguring a school's entire education curriculum to be electronic delivery. And once you've adopted electronic means of education, you're on the hook forever, because the hardware is going to get obsolete. The software is going to need to be updated. You'll have iteration 2, iteration 3, iteration 4, and then another company will come in and say, we can improve on that one and give you another program. So it's a constant on the hook for this. You buy a textbook, it'll last you several years. Software programs will last you maybe 6 months. It's probably obsolete by the time it leaves the shelf and is delivered to the store. So, I mean, this is a moneymaker, a boatload of moneymaker of money for software and IT companies. And like you said, Jenny, the people who are pushing this are not coming out of the education world. They're coming out of the private sector.
Yep.
Well, before we got on air tonight, Kay and I were talking about knowledge-based economy. So when you're talking about data and what's the point in all this, and have you heard the term, we're living in a knowledge-based economy?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So knowledge is power, but also knowledge is money. And it's almost pointless, the degree of information that's being extracted or requested out of kids will be future adults, and on healthcare. And if you stop and look at it, the incident reports that you're talking about when you were talking about safe schools and the level of data and detail, each of those incidents have a code that's assigned to it, a digital number that's assigned to it. So when that incident happens, somebody has to take the time to enter it in, right?
Right.
And put in that code. So Kayra and I were talking, it's like, that's like when you go to the doctor, there's a code that's assigned to the procedure, the office visit. And that's the International Classification of Diseases. So just think about this. Every activity, human activity, is being assigned a number, and somebody gets to data entry to analyze every human activity, whether it's a kid in school, safe kids, healthcare records, every human activity. I mean, this is like make work. This is not productive work. This is just bits and pieces of data.
Yeah.
And that's, well, they say big data is the new oil. And I think that's a really good comparison, because a lot of this is not being driven by malicious reasons. And I wouldn't want to imply that, but it's being driven by making money. And I'll tell you what, I'm reading right now, going back to how technology was used during the reign of the Nazis. And I'm reading a book about IBM's role in it. It's pretty, pretty amazing. But one of the real simple quotes from that book is that for IBM, information was money. And they didn't care how their technology was being used. They didn't care about that. They cared about breaking new ground and making money. And we're going through the same situation with a lot of these technology corporations now, that they're refusing to take any responsibility for how their technology is being used, even sending it over to authoritarian countries like China, for instance, to be used on their citizens there. And that has to stop.
I'm not so sure it'll stop. We're running out of time, and we didn't even get to one of the key questions I wanted to ask you. Jenny, who opposes Common Core state standards, and who supports them? Let's start with the support. Who in the state of Oklahoma is supporting the adoption of Common Core state standards?
Well, I think there are two major senators that are supporting the Common Core, which is really stifling the voice of parents who, once they learn what this is and they are made aware of this and educated about what this is, they don't like it. And the majority of the teachers that we've spoken to don't like it as well. You've got a whole slew of Democratic candidates running for the state superintendent's job who don't like this. So who are stopping it? Well, Senator John Ford from around the Tulsa area is a huge proponent of Common Core, and then also Clark Jolly, Senator Clark Jolly, who's from the Edmond area in Oklahoma, is also a huge supporter, and they sit as heads on some very large committees which can stop legislation to prevent Common Core, and that's what's happened in the past.
Does the governor support Common Core, Governor Mary Fallon?
The governor not only supports Common Core, but she is now the head of the National Governors Association and has basically put out a school to work, just like you were talking about, from the 90s model for her education initiative as the chairman of the NGA. So, unfortunately, our governor really does not appear to be interested in hearing what Oklahomans are saying, and has told a number of people that I know in conversations that she intends to go forward with this just no matter what.
Is that a report that you're talking about that the governor supports? What's the name of it, and where can our listeners see it if they want to read it?
I honestly can't remember, to tell you the truth.
Is it America Works? America Works, is that it? Or
it may be America Works. That may be what it is. Yes.
Okay.
That may be what it is, come to think of it. I think I blocked it out because it was so communist that several parts of the speech that she made to introduce her initiative at the NGA, several parts of her speech really caught my attention, and I actually Googled them and found out that they were also very similar statements were uttered by the Chinese general at the Politburo when he was talking about his education plan. So I think that's concerning.
So it's America Works, Education and Training for Tomorrow's Jobs by Mary Fallon, or advocated. It's on the maryfallon.org website. So if you want to go to the maryfallon.org, Fallon is F-A-L-L-I-N. Website, that report is there. America Works, Education and Training for Tomorrow's Jobs. And as you said, Jenny, this is 1990s revisited, so this is outcome-based education school to work because we're training the little workforce development units known as our children to be productive workers for the corporations. And instead of getting a great liberal arts education and becoming what they want to become. So who opposes it? Just about everybody else?
Well, much of the House opposes it. I hope I'm not going too far out on a limb on saying that. And the Speaker of the House actually has come out on several occasions and made statements on his Facebook page that he is not a supporter. I think we have a really good chance of getting something going in the House. And a lot of the senators I speak to are against it as well. And it's very frustrating when you, I mean, I can think of several of them right off, but Nathan Dom, Senator Sharp, David Holt. I can think of a number of them that are actually against this initiative. But when you have two very powerful senators that hold basically two very powerful chairmanships, you know, everybody just does what they want to do. And I find that a real slap in the face to representative government.
All right. We're about ready to come to the end of this hour of American the Balance on Truth and Focus Internet Radio. And Kay, do you have any other questions for our guest, Jenny White?
Well, of course, we want to ask her what we can do, and I just want to comment that I think I read this too, Jenny, and I think I was traumatized as well and have blocked it out. I'm looking back over it, and it's stomach-churning. It really is. The terminology is really stomach-churning, so I encourage everybody to read that. And yes, tell us what we can do to help.
Well, I think we have to get this out of state law. And the way that we have to attack this right now is that people have got to call their representatives and their senators, and they've got to tell them how upset about this they are and demand that we get this out of state law. And you know what? Here's the thing. This should satisfy our governor, because if it's out of state law and people in Oklahoma want to use it and districts say, oh, we've spent all this money on it, well, fine, use it. If the people in your district want to use it, use Common Core. But it should not be a mandate, which, by the way, is unfunded on every school district in Oklahoma. It needs to be out of state law and out of the rules for the State Department of Education.
All right. Thank you for that. Do you have a particular bill that you're supporting or opposing?
We are actually in the middle of working on several of them. So we will, as soon as we have something that we can share, we will most certainly do it. But the thing that we just have to stress over and over again is, even if you have to go to your representative or senator's office, and certainly if you're a constituent of John Ford or Clark Jolly, I would adjure you to go to their office and complain bitterly about how you feel like your voice is not being heard. There is really nothing much, unfortunately, we can do other than getting it out of state law and out of school code.
All right. If people want to call the Oklahoma House of Representatives, you can call area code 405-521-2711, area code 405-521-2711, or you can call 1-800-522-8502, 1-800-522-8502. And I'd suggest you just start with Representative Jason Nelson. And just let him know that you are opposed to student data collection systems just in general. And I know that he's working on a particular piece of legislation right now. And Jenny, give us ROPE's contact website again and how people could reach you.
It's www.restoreokpublic.education.com, and people can just actually, I'm happy for you to email me at jenny@restoreokpublic.education.com.
Thank you very much for being our guest today, and
thank you so much for having me.
We could probably go on for 2 hours and just let you talk, and I know you've been crisscrossing the state trying to inform people about what's wrong with Common Core State Standards, and I applaud your efforts and thank you for all that you've done in this particular fight, and may God bless you.
Well, and you for health care as well, so God bless you in return.
All right.
And you too, Kay, for data.
Yeah.
Thank you.
For everything that you've done. Well, that's the end of this hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden. My co-host today has been Kay Beach, and our special guest has been Jenny White of ROPE. We thank you for listening, and may God bless.